This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. This is your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site covering the Arizona the Cardinals. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and it is episode 228. It's the basically an off-season show. We haven't had a show since we talked about the draft. We're starting to get a little bit of information come in. We did kind of miss one big piece of information that we're going to talk about that in this show with Patrick Peterson, and we'll be off at least a couple more weeks with the personally. I will be traveling. So we'll have to, we'll sit on this information, but we're getting right at the end of the off season because OTAs have begun. 1 week of the three is finished. They have a second week beginning, this week on Wednesday, and then the third week next week. And then following that will be a mini camp. And then that will wrap up spring work until training camp, which we'll have to wait and see what that even is going to look like this year. How many are open? How many are closed? Cliff Kingsbury, we're going to talk about his kind of keeping things a little bit under wrap right now in terms of what we're doing. So we're going to talk about, in this edition, we're going to talk about Patrick Peterson and everything around that. We're going to talk about the OTA stories, Kyler Murray, what we're seeing from the offense, comments that the coaches have made on podcasts. They did make a couple of offseason, they did make a couple of roster moves. And then we're going to talk some about moving forward on the show. We'll talk about veterans on the chopping block, players who have something to prove, and then some young players who could surprise. Now, Seth, what's been going on? I mean, what seems to be the biggest thing going on over at your site over at Revenge of the Birds right now?
You know, it's kind of twofold. Obviously, any kind of inkling of what is going on with Kyler Murray and the rookie class, really all the offensive weapons. I mean, people are interested in Michael Dogby and Byron Murphy, but really it's on overdrive when it comes to, you know, Murray and Andy Isabella and Hakeem Butler and even Keyshawn Johnson. That's kind of, I would say 1A, and then obviously 1B is the whole Patrick Peterson thing. And I don't even know what to call it. Like, is it a fiasco? Is it just the Cardinals being prudent and a star player whining? Or, you know, are the Cardinals the bad guy in this kind of PR relationship type of thing? That's why I said I don't even know what to call it, because it's just so, it's something that we don't deal with very often here anymore. Players get disgruntled. Tyrann Mathieu, obviously, Chris Johnson, but typically it's, you know, guys that are cut. You don't see in Arizona anymore these type of disgruntled kind of barks from players under contract. I mean, we don't talk about holdouts. David Johnson had like a mini hold.
He held out of mini camp.
And then like he was at mandatory. No, he didn't show up to off-season required workouts. And then they waived all his fines and all his late fees for his, 2 days late to camp or 3 days late to camp. And I mean, so that was kind of the biggest guy with a contract thing I can remember in the last 5 or 6 years, honestly. So it's different to see this kind of creeping up again. And it starts to worry you in the sense of like, oh crap, is this going back to the same old Cardinals? But I don't think it is. I don't know. It's such a convoluted situation anyways.
So let's kind of go back down the timeline with Patrick Peterson. If you followed anything going on over the last couple of weeks, you've known this. The big news was that Peterson was suspended for the first six games of the season of the year under the league's policy for performance enhancing substances. So he got nailed for PEDs. Six game suspension. But before that, something happened with the front office. Someone said something, someone did something, and Peterson, who had rescinded all the problems that, you know, he asked for a trade last year. Things were smoothed over, apparently, with Michael Bidwill. He even came out at the golf tournament, the Phoenix Open, and apologized to fans, said he's all and he wants to be a Cardinal for life. But then he shows up to offseason workouts, so phase one. He had a workout bonus, so I don't know how far back this dates. He has a $250,000 workout bonus in his contract, so it would have made sense that he showed up to phase one for those initial workouts, the training period. But then after that, before the first voluntary minicamp, which was the week of the draft, something happened and he wiped his social media of anything Cardinals related. He didn't show up to voluntary minicamp, and something was up. No one knew exactly what it was, except it wasn't related to a contract extension. It was something personal that someone in the front office did or said.
Right. It wasn't related to money is how they really kind of forced that. I wouldn't say issue, but they forced that narrative like, oh, it's not related to money. And
we find out it kind of was. So the news of the suspension comes out. It was leaked early. He had expected it a little bit later. So it came out on the day of his charity event. So he had to kind of address it. He's not showing up to OTAs. And so there's this little thing there's a cloud hanging over the team right now where Patrick Peterson is clearly unhappy. And now he's suspended for the first six games of the season. So then he kind of have to regroup, which now makes sense. Obviously, the team knew about it for months. Peterson knew about it for months. And supposedly, what it comes down to, his unhappiness with the team, is their unwillingness to restructure his contract so that his fine or the salary he loses, because he's going to forfeit $3.88 million of his contract in those first six games of the season. He apparently approached the team about restructuring that in simple terms, like you would do to gain cap relief during a year, is you convert some of your salary into a signing bonus, which saves half that money in salary cap this year and pushes it down the line, but it gets them money now, and then they get a little less during the season. It sounds like he requested to do that, to convert some of that salary into a bonus in the off season, and then his salary is less during the season, therefore the salary he's giving up in fines is less. Steve Keim either said, no, we won't, or no, we can't. That's, to me, is a little bit unclear whether it was a case where the league would have come down on the Cardinals or whether they were even allowed to do it.
Well,
clearly, Peterson was mad. He was upset that thinking that he's done this for the team. They didn't have his back, and now he's upset. And now he's using the dad card for voluntary workouts. He'll be at mini camp and that's okay. But we've got this thing hanging over the Cardinals now where Patrick Peterson looks like, is he Odell Beckham? Is he Antonio Brown? Or is this something that we're going to be able to get through?
Well, and obviously they could have done it because Ben Watson was signed by the Patriots and then suspended, and they converted, you know, $625,000 to bonus for him. And I mean, I know Watson had a previous stint with the Patriots, but it's not like he's the franchise defensive back that Patrick Peterson is. So I think if that doesn't happen, you're able to claim ignorance, right? Like, oh, well, you know, we probably would have gotten in trouble, so we didn't want to do anything to jeopardize, you know, the standing with the league. Well, you know, make up something. But then another team does it, and a team that's notorious for you know, getting rid of players before they become problems, and you know, that doesn't allow the, you know, me over the team attitude, you know, blah, 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 and the Patriots. And they come out and do something solid for a veteran who's going to be suspended, and the Cardinals, right, again, right or wrong, I tend to side with the Cardinals on this, but for, you know, they're going to come out not looking as good as maybe they could or should have in a situation where, you know, hey, you know, we know you did something stupid, or we know you're going to get busted for something stupid. Let's just do, you know, we'll find a way to split the difference. We'll find a way to save you two or three game checks into a converted bonus, and you know, you only feel that pinch in two or three games. And that's, you know, we're not going to do the whole thing, but maybe that's the best we can do for you in this situation where you, you know, you did screw up. Because, again, a PED suspension is four games. So this was not necessarily just the PED suspension. It was obviously a PED suspension, but it's the masking agent. It's the knowingly taking something so it doesn't show up in the system agent that makes, you know, this a lot more nefarious than I think the, oh, my wife prescribed me something that I shouldn't have had and I should have double-checked with the league first. Because that's the thing, is if it's just four games, a ton of guys have that. I mean,
yes, all the and time. You hear that, like, you know, I took something unknowingly. I've always been real careful. I'm not quite sure what happened. But when here's a case, essentially, what it boils down to this, essentially, Patrick Peterson cheated and tried to cover it up. Is that's this type of suspension. And that's the thing that's the most troubling part of it. And with the Cardinals statement, it doesn't completely condemn him. So it almost is a case where they understand kind of what the reasoning was for whatever it is that he took, but they recognize that it is his responsibility to make sure that he's not taking it. And thing. Now, I want to comment one thing about the whole thing with Ben Watson. He was technically a free agent. And so they were able to do this. So they didn't change his contract, but when they signed him to a new contract, they messed with it to do it because they knew about the competitiveness. Right. And so the Patrick Peterson's deal a little bit different because they would be changing the contract knowing about that. So I don't, you know, a couple of radio guys here have made it sound like the Cardinals couldn't do it. It might have been looked at with they might have been frowned upon by the league to do that.
Oh, maybe I 100% believe that is what the whole thing ended up being, is that there, I mean, cause that's the other thing we know the Patriots, and we know that they will do up to and beyond the line of acceptable to the NFL. And so
they were within the rules because he didn't have a contract. There was nothing to change. They just worked it so that he wasn't losing too much money. Well, the Cardinals are stuck with their hands tied. It's like, we got this. So unless we do a contract extension, which I know from what I've been told that he's been promised a contract extension. They just can't do it this offseason. They are flush against the cap right now after the signed their draft picks. They've got $6 million against the cap and they don't get any of the salary relief from Patrick's suspension until the season starts.
Well, and my other question is this. So all the cryptic, you know, Instagram posts, the snakes in the grass, blah, 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 that came out before the draft, right?
Yeah.
So was the blow up, and Jess and I aren't, you know, saying that there was this, you know, having to separate people in the halls, Ray Horton style blow up, but was this blow up or this dust up, related to, hey, we're going to get Kyler Murray, so we're going to eat $8.5 million of Josh Rosen's salary, so we can't pay you right now.
So we'll do it. We'll do it.
Right, we're going to do it. Don't worry.
It's like Anquan Boldin. They said they were going to take care of Anquan Boldin, but they had to take care of Fitz. But they told him, wait a year, basically. Wait a year.
Right. And And we've seen this, and it has nothing to do with positions. It has nothing to do with, you know, diva or this or that. Like, and Jess and I will always, I won't say always, but I would say 99% of the time, will always advocate for the player in these situations. Because, again, there's not guaranteed contracts in the NFL. Make as much, young men, make as much money as you can. And however long you're blessed to play in the NFL, just go make that money. But again, this is, I mean, the Cardinals have treated him really well. They've been very cognizant of his place in the league from a salary standpoint. Remember, when the Seahawks extended Richard Sherman, the Cardinals basically gave Peterson more money than Sherman to say, we think you're the best corner in the league. And then he was the top paid guy for a season or so. And, you know, just the way the inflation of the NFL works, it can't be forever. But so this is one of those situations where I get where the player's coming from. I truly do. 4 game checks for him is, you know, going to be what, 3.2 million?
Almost 3.9. That's a lot of cheese.
Right. And so it's, you know, I get it. Like, hey, find a way to float me a $2.5 million signing bonus. Let me recoup some of that. You know, I'll eat this, but I mean, that is just, oh, it is so, it's so hard to feel like the Cardinals are doing him dirty when they've taken care of him his entire career. They've never wavered from him being their guy. And this is, you know, now the second and really the third time of him kind of airing them out and airing the dirty laundry, so to speak, when they're like, dude, we just need a year. Like, we're going to pay you. Don't worry. Like, we're going to take care of you. We always have. You know, so that's the only difficult thing with this whole situation is, could the Cardinals have done something? Again, I don't know. I'm sure they could have, but should they have? I really don't feel like it. I mean, apart from just the financial constraints they're in, which is another conversation for another day, just the idea of like, hey, you, like Jess said, like, this isn't a 4-game, I took a supplement I got at the gas station. This is a 6-game, you took something, you knew you took something, and then you tried to cover it up. Like, I'm sorry, man. I respect you. I think you're a hell of a player. Just take your medicine and like, get on with it. Like, this whole situation now has become, you know, in an off season of optimism, it's become a black cloud that again just hangs over this organization. Of like, you start to go, oh, here we go again. It's the Cardinals. They can't, you know, they can't do anything right. They've messed it up since BA left, and Keim doesn't know what he's like. That's just, I'm not saying that's what's happening. It's just, that's the mentality that becomes the Arizona Cardinals.
Now, let's come back after this break. So coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast. So before we move on to another topic, let's talk about what now. If we look ahead of those 6 games, the depth chart, do the Cardinals need to do anything? Who's going to replace him? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast. Still talking about Patrick Peterson, only now, how do they address it? Now, here's the thing. I am not worried about actually in the least about Patrick missing OTAs, because this actually is the perfect time to give guys extra reps now that need it. Cardinals were really already kind of set. No, so the Cardinals have known about this for some time, and we can now say, okay, some of the moves that they made now make much more sense. The decision to sign Robert Alford, okay, that made sense in and of itself. Now, drafting Byron Murphy and signing Tremaine Brock make much more sense, because as Patrick sits out this time, so we're not stuck in a situation where they're having to consider Brandon Williams again. They have a trio of cornerbacks that they can look at for the second spot. So we're going to assume Robert Alford stays in the starting lineup. He was already pegged to do that. So you've got three other guys that are going to battle for playing time to basically be Patrick's guy for 6 weeks. And that would be David Amerson, who was a starter last year for the Cardinals, the last five games of the year. That would be Tremaine Brock, a veteran who's been with Vance Joseph twice, once he was a rookie in San Francisco, and then last year with the Denver Broncos. He's a capable, he's not fantastic, but he's able. And then their rookie in Byron Murphy. If we're looking at just that situation there, are they set or do they need to do something else in your opinion?
I don't think that there's anything else they need to do. I mean, here's the thing. You can never have enough cornerbacks in the NFL. It's like offensive linemen. You just pray that you weather any storm that may come in the port. And I think, I mean, clearly the game plan was to address the position like they never have. They did it. I don't know what more we can expect from them in that sense. So, I mean, in that way, I think they've done as much as they can. You're going to have Tremaine Brock and Byron Murphy and David Amerson. Basically, two of those guys are going to get, you know, 75% of the snaps, 75%+ of the snaps. And then you just hope to stay afloat. You hope it's not such a sieve defensively at this point that, you know, it makes the season bad. And somebody asked me this, and I don't even know if we were going to talk about it, but I'll just bring it up. Somebody asked me this. It's like, do you, you know, if they play well, do you look at trading Patrick? And my response was, I don't think you can. I just don't think you can. Like, even if they're 4-2 at that point, and Murph and Brock and Alford are all playing well, or Amerson and, you know, whatever the combination is, I just don't think you can. Because, one, you're not going to get value back at this time. And this isn't even like Josh Rosen value we're talking about. Like, this is a proven all-pro at a prime position, nearing the end,
on pace for a Hall of Fame career,
right? And nearing the end of his prime, like you just can't. I don't know. You can't do it.
I don't think when it comes to me, there's no way you can. I mean, unless he is really unhappy. I mean, you can trade him after back,
right? But well, that's what I was going to say.
This year. If you're going to trade him, it's got to be next offseason, because no matter who he's traded to, he's going to insist on a new contract. Well, and so it's going to have to be in the offseason for that to work, because no one's going to redo that deal midseason,
not knowing what he is.
Exactly.
Well, and that was my other point I forgot to get to, was that, I mean, he's only going to have two games back. So, I mean, no matter how good of shape he's in, it's only going to be two games back. Like, this is, you know, remember, these suspensions are, they're not allowed at the facility. So, like, he's literally only going to be working out for, you know, the week of game 7, for the first time since August, basically. Right? It's that last day before, or is it the last day of cuts that he gets retro to that suspension?
I think once
final cuts are made.
So once final cuts are made, he goes on the reserve suspension list, and
then they get an extra 53rd spot, technically like a 54th spot for 6 weeks until he's eligible. Okay. So that's the thing, is like we're basically talking, you know, 50 days without him doing anything. And I know they're NFL athletes. They're going to keep in shape and blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, we're talking more than, you know, a quarter of the season, we're talking more than a third of the season, he's going to miss in the first season of a new defense with, I mean, what, 60% new players? It's going to be hard for him to come back and play in two games and show that he's still the man, and then get fair value. So there's just too much to trading him this year that are negatives.
And when it comes to the ideal situation for 2019, this first six games of this season, there's a lot of people who would love to see Byron Murphy be that number two corner. Vance Joseph kind of said it this way in one of the coaches' podcasts that they have. It's going to be a tall order for him coming in as a rookie. I think Byron Murphy was kind of slated from day one after they picked him in the draft. He's learning all the positions right now. So he's learning nickel, he's learning outside border corner, and he's also learning safety. In fact, learning single high safety in some packages. But when it comes to a specific role as a rookie, let's not confuse the kid. Let's give him one role, make him be the slot guy. And especially playing six games and then have to change gears, like, you know, a la Hassan Reddick, that didn't work out real well. Tremaine Brock's probably the perfect guy for that. And I know he's the guy who's going to be the number – he's going to get the first chance to fill that starting lineup. I can't think of a more ideal situation. He's a guy who has an experience in the defense. He's a guy who started a lot of games but isn't really super starter caliber. And so once Patrick comes out, it's really easy. He just goes to the bench. Kind of the same with David Amerson, though I think Brock is a better – while Amerson might be the better – have the higher end potential, Brock's probably the better suit because he's played in the defense before.
Yeah, and – you know, it'll be kind of the Ben Wickery situation, don't you expect?
Yeah, honestly, yes. Without hopefully him getting cut,
right? Like the ending will hopefully be different. But you know, he'll probably start a game, two, three, and then hopefully Murph is ready, and you go from there, type thing. That's the biggest thing, is they just have to. They have to make sure that these rookies, and obviously we know that Murray is going to play, but these other rookies need to have the chance to make a big impact. While last year's rookies played quite a bit, we need to see in terms of production, a much higher return on investment early on, especially on the defensive side of the ball, where that's really going to be the question mark as we head into this season, outside of the obvious, you know, offensive line question mark that we always have.
So in terms of if you had to pick who the favorite is, if you had to handicap these guys in terms of the starter opposite Alford, and I'm just going to go that Robert Alford, he's going to be the starter. I think that's going to be more or less a given. So my number one would be, I think I'd prefer to have Brock as the starter, followed by Amerson, followed by Byron Murphy. I'm all about, when it comes to rookies, don't give them everything, because most rookies are going to fail if you give them everything. Let's give them one role, stick them in the slot, let him excel there, period.
Right, and I mean, the reality is, how many teams have three good corners, let alone four, right? So expecting the Cardinals to not have a hole at this point is, I think, it's too much Homer glasses, and I think you just need to realize that it's going to probably be a tough start to the season for the corners and the secondary after what had been an off season where you're like, all right, I kind of like where this is going.
Coming up soon on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to move on from the Patrick Peterson situation. We're going to come back and talk about kind of the storylines around OTAs. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Time to talk about OTAs. One round is complete. Three OTA practices are in the books. A fourth might be by the time this show actually drops. But when we're recording on Tuesday night. The Cardinals will begin OTA practices in week two on Wednesday, about 11 a.m. Reporters got to see the very first practice, although they could only comment and report about what they saw for the first 20 minutes, which is, warm-ups and special teams. They will be able to see practice again on Wednesday. I will be in attendance there is the plan. Not that I will be able to give you too much insight, but what we have so far is the positive stories, the positive impact of Kyler Murray, not unlike what we heard about Josh Rosen a year ago. Last year, people were gushing about how smart Josh Rosen is and how he's able to run the two-minute offense. We're hearing a lot of good things out of Kyler Murray. What are the biggest impressions you've gotten from what we've heard about Murray so far?
I think the biggest thing is, and this shouldn't be a shock because it's been true of every level he's been at. It's just how great of an athlete he is and how even the guys playing with him sometimes forget, like, oh, we're learning. We're trying to, run a practice. I know they're not allowed to call them that, but we're trying to run a practice and you're getting caught just watching the movement and the ability of an athlete that is just, it's not normal. And, Justin and I talked about this during the draft process. If he measures at what, 6 feet and a half inch, I mean, we're talking probably one of the highest rated quarterback prospects to ever come out. It's, a 2.25 inch difference that causes people to be so worried, but they forget just how special he is of a player and what he can do from an athletic standpoint. That, and again, this is like super high praise, and I'm just talking about it from an athletic standpoint, but what he's able to do on the football field, no one has ever done before. And that's what, I mean, you're already hearing about that from DJ Humphries, from Justin Pugh. You're hearing about it from, the wide receivers and the running backs, of just how different it is with him on the field and trying to get into sync with him, because he is such a special athlete.
One thing that we noticed a year ago from Josh Rosen is that he came in with a confidence. He came in not being nervous. He himself kind of said, even if you don't feel confident, you pretend like you are. But Kyler Murray's given that same sort of vibe. Now, part of it's because he's in an offense that he really kind of already knows. But nonetheless, DJ Humphries compared the same sort of confidence he can smell is the same that he's got from Carson Palmer. He said, I played with Carson Palmer, and yeah, I've seen all his faces, and he gives kind of the same, you can smell the same confidence. He believes that much in himself. He's not the doe-eyed rookie out there. He believes he belongs and will succeed and be great in the NFL. And other players sense that they're all real careful. They're not saying, oh my gosh, he's a star, but they like what they see. So he's confident on the field. He definitely took a step in the right direction when he showed up for the first day of with the whole team there and brings in 8 dozen donuts and ham and cheese croissants and milk and juice for the offensive linemen. That's the sign of a savvy locker room teammate, smart player. And then to translate that onto the field, where he's getting his first reps with the team, he's not starstruck. He's confident, and he expects to be there. That will win over players in a hurry. Now, he has to do things on the field and Justin Pugh said it. Everyone knows. Ultimately, the respect he will earn will be what he does on the field, how he performs on the field, and how he carries himself off the field and with his teammates. He's got the second half of that already done. We just need to see him do it on the field now.
Right, and that's going to be the hard part of this kind of off season is that this is like nuclear testing that they're doing. They're so damn secret about what this offense will be that we're not going to get much in detail. And I'd quite frankly be shocked if we saw much during the preseason.
We might not even see Kyler Murray much during the preseason. That's crazy, as that sounds.
So we may not really have an idea of who he is or what he is as a player until September. And so that makes it tough because, you know, we're all fans first off and just the frustration of waiting to see if anything happens or how this goes is just, I mean, it's phenomenal because the anticipation is so awesome, but at the same time, you're like, oh, I just wish I wish it was September, right? Like, September, we're watching hopefully the start of a Arizona Cardinals revolution, and just kind of go from there.
And that Seth brought up, we brought up a point that we wanted to touch on, and that's what can we expect from this Cardinals offense? And Cliff Kingsbury is being very low-key about what that's... He's giving away basically nothing. There's only one thing that he's really sort of given up. One is the use of the shotgun. And that doesn't... He said it back at the Combine that he doesn't see any disadvantages to it. A.Q. Shipley's mentioned on some podcasts that it's going to be like 99% out of the shotgun. That I can believe. But after than that, what he says is, we'll see. We're going to cater to our players. So, you know, it's almost Mike McCoy to the extreme, because that was everything Mike McCoy said last offseason, was how his scheme is flexible, how he's worked with all these different types of quarters. So he builds his offense around his players. Kingsbury said the exact same thing, only he's giving away nothing. When DJ Humphries is asked about it, he said, nope, I'm not going to give it top secret. You know, I'm a soldier. He's not going to give anything away. And we get a glimpse. Okay, we should expect to see David Johnson as a receiver more. We should expect to see the shotgun. But then he says, but maybe not as much as you think. You know, everyone seems to think they're going to have a lot of 10 personnel.
I think they will at times, but I don't think it's going to happen as much as everybody expects.
You know, and honestly, if they're 10 personnel, I think it's mostly going to be 11. And it'll look like a 10, but it'll be 11.
I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, it'll end up being like a Charles Clay.
Charles Clay and David Johnson. Those are guys that they'll add, or technically it'll be 20 personnel, because then you'll end up with Chase Edmonds and David Johnson on the field at the same time. You might see that, but it's the different personnel groups. Now, how much are they going to run? And Sean Kuechler, way back. So this is an interview that one of their coaches' podcasts maybe it wasn't that. Maybe it was when they introduced the coaches. There was a comment he made. He said, we are going to line up with two tight ends and run the football. So that was a little reveal there, because Kingsbury is relying on his NFL personnel who know the NFL and know what works. So it's the secret. And I don't know why it's a big secret, because once they put a game plan on the field, that secrecy only works for week one. And not even completely so, because they're going to show something during the preseason.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, you and I talked about this, though. I think, off the air, obviously, I think one of the big things that we're going to see, and why a guy like Bill Belichick was like, hey, if Josh McDaniels goes and takes job X, Cliff Kingsbury is the guy I want as my offensive coordinator. And it's something that we've seen with the Patriots and consistently that they do. And that's that they're basically a week to week stylistic team, you know? So one day they're running spreads, one day they're running powers, one day is, you know, so I think you're going to get a little bit of that in the Cliff Kingsbury offensive system. And that'll be what the secret is all about, is that, hey, we got to get, you know, we've got to get four game plans ready basically for the first 4 weeks. So that way we can manipulate and change things and say, like, oh, when we're, you know, when we are going three wide, you know, one tight, one back, you know, and we're strong right, these are the plays that you saw in game one. Now all of a sudden we're not going to run any of those plays for 15 or 20 plays, and then we'll throw one in to see if you're paying attention. So that's I think what you're going to see out of Kingsbury's offense, more so than just the straight, like, hey, we run the air raid, this is what we do type thing.
When, in terms of other storylines in OTAs, is there anything that stands out other than what people are trying to get? Because basically every person is, every player, every rookie, every veteran gets asked about Kyler Murray and then asked about the offense. Are there any other storylines that stand out to you so far in terms of things that we've heard from players on the radio, coaches on podcasts, or just the people answering questions, players and coaches answering questions after that one practice last week?
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get some stuff, right? I mean, it's going to come bits and pieces, but the overall kind of dynamic of where they're headed is already being cast, so to speak. And how that plays out over the summer. I mean, thank God guys are showing up now. That, I mean, we didn't talk about that much, but wasn't that something you were kind of at least a little concerned with, since it is a brand new system for the second year in a row, that guys, like, I mean, Fitz one thing, but David Johnson, who's going to be a focal point, you know, even Terrell Suggs, who's with a new team and not there, like, I don't know. These are all things that are important for kind of building in that right direction. This isn't like this has been a team that's been together for 12 years like the Patriots, and it's like, hey, this is what we do every year.
I honestly wasn't, you know, people made a big deal when Patrick wasn't there. And then a little even more so when no one saw Suggs, David Johnson, or Larry Fitzgerald on that first practice. David Johnson makes sense. His wife just had a baby.
Right.
So Larry Fitzgerald as well. If I can recall, I think it's almost every year he misses a practice. And it might be always that first one. And even that second day, I think he was there. I didn't see any pictures with him with his helmet on. And so it's just a way to save his body. He's usually got some other things going on. Terrell Suggs. The Vance Joseph defense is a Wade Phillips defense, and it's not something necessarily that Terrell Suggs has played in before necessarily, but with 16 years in the league in a defense that's it's known around the league. It's not like Cliff Kingsbury's offers were like, what is this? Vance Joseph's going to run a Wade Phillips defense. And so Suggs, I'm not terribly worried about. He's old.
There's only so many bullets left in the chamber.
Right, right. And he's, you know, as far as we know, I don't think he's an every down. I don't think they intend on him being an every down player. Maybe, but I don't think so.
I mean, that's another thing. I mean, what are these rotations going to look like?
Yeah, that's another thing. It's going to be fun to see. But how much does Brooks Reed play? Because right. Chandler Jones will probably play
90. Almost, yeah, right.
90. And so we're going to see. Is this a rotation of, okay, Suggs is the sub, and Brooks Reed is the base.
And what about who's the guy they kept? Malvo or Cameron Malvo? Was that the guy they kept?
That last year, and they still have him listed as a defensive end, and I'm like, there's no way he's really going to be a defensive end.
Right? Maybe. I don't know. But
it doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. It's like this offseason, the secrecy is just – it's going to drive you nuts, one, if you let it. Because that's the thing. Is like I really don't get I usually don't get frustrated by things like – OTA practices, but now it's like they're being so secretive, and then you add in the fact that they're, you know, guys are missing, and you're like, all right, like this is getting ridiculous. Let's just get moving forward, because all I want is real football. Like I want to be able to see what's going to happen with this, because that's the thing, is it's exciting, and it's in the same breath it's nerve-wracking and it's just one of those situations where you have no idea what to expect come September 8th, right? Like, this could be a complete and utter disaster, or this could be a stroke of brilliance. And the less that we know, the closer we get to game one, the more the anxiety is just going to go up every week.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, let's talk about the defensive additions. How do they fit? They made one, you know, minor move with a veteran, and the connection that they have to Vance Joseph. That's kind of next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. The Cardinals are not only making over their offense, they're making over their defense. There was one roster move of note. They added veteran defensive lineman Terrell McClain. Yet another player who has connections with Vance Joseph. That now makes, I think, four offseason additions and five players on defense that have worked on the same defense that Vance Joseph has been a staff on. And then obviously the staff has almost all guys who are connected to Joseph and previous coaching staff. So if you're looking at what impact do you say Terrell McClain does yet? Do you think he's a guy that is expected to make the roster or is expected to compete for the roster? Because on the surface, it looks like he should be a lock for the roster considering their lack of experience and really...
Well, just lack of depth too.
Right. I mean, you've got Corey Peters, you've got Darius Filon, and you've got Rodney Gunter. Robert Kendich, I'm not going to count. He's out to at least midseason. So you've got three starters. And then after that, you've got Pasoni, Tassini, you've got...
Didn't they release him the other day?
I think they did release Tassini. So you've got Vincent Valentine, the guy that's got a handful of games that's not a real person. I know you probably don't think that's real.
No, I thought you were making that up.
But then they got their draft picks, Michael Dogby and Zach Allen. Now, Zach Allen and Michael Dogby, and I'll say this. Dogby might be my low-key favorite pick of the draft in terms of what I think he will overachieve his draft status in terms of what he does. I really like that pick. But that said, that's just not a lot of experience on the line. Now, Corey Peters has a ton of experience. Filon, he's in year five. Rodney Gunter is in year five.
And this is a really interesting thing. And we talked about this with Filon on the signing. But I talked to a couple people, and their feeling with Filon is the same feeling they have with Peters, and that's those guys are like they're best when they're playing 60% of the snaps. So you know, you talked about McClain. I feel like he's a lock because he's got to play. They got to have two guys that can play 40% of the snaps, or they need four guys that can each play 20% of the snaps. And so the further away you get from, you know, that 100% snap rate, the more guys you need to fill it. And especially in a 3-4 like Joseph that asks their their defensive linemen to really control the point of attack to keep those linebackers free to make plays. You know, something that you picked up on early in the Vance Joseph comments is that you draft highly edge rushers and cornerbacks. You don't draft highly inside guys, i.e. down defensive linemen and inside linebackers, because those guys are robots. Those guys are supposed to do a job, and they have their keys and they're supposed to do their job on every single play. They're not quote unquote playmakers. So that's why the McClain signing makes so much sense. He is to a T what Vance Joseph needs on this defense. He's not a game changer. He's not a guy that's going to go in there and wreck an offense. What he is a guy that's going to say, okay, I've got to play two gap assignment here. So I really need to hold up at the point of attack and take on these double teams so that Hassan Reddick or Jordan Hicks or Buda Baker or DJ Swearinger can clean up in that fill hole. So that's the thing with Gunter and Peters and Fallon and now the addition of McClain is you've got five guys that can do their job and do it well. You don't have a guy that you're gonna leave out there for 90, you know, 85 to 90% of the snaps and just let him work. That's not on this roster. But in a Vance Joseph, in a successful Vance Joseph defense, they don't need that. That's not what they need. It's not what they look for. And so, how the rotation plays out, things of that nature, it's way above my pay grade. But I think their goal is to have at least until Kim DJ's back, that you're going to see 60% of the snaps played by Peters, Fallon, and Gunter. And then you'll see kind of a rotation of whether it's Valentine or whether it's Dogby or whether it's Zach Allen. You know, you're going to see a rotation of those guys with Terrell McClain and eventually Robert Kimdiche. So if you end up getting, 30% of the snaps from McClain and 10% of the snaps from Dogby, and then, you get 20 and 20 from whoever else is playing and Zach Allen. So whether it's, Kimdiche early or Kimdiche late and Valentine early or whatever the kind of you go with that, I think that's a good rotation because you know what you're going to get out of Peters and Fallon. Gunter's really the wild card at this point in terms of can he be a rock out there again for 50 to 60% of the snaps. You're not going to ask him to be Ndamukong Suh. You're not asking him to be, DeForest Buckner. You're not asking him to do things he's just not capable of. But if you're asking him to, gap and you're asking him to kind of eat blocks, that's something that he was really good at his rookie season when he played the nose.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, let's come back and talk about some of the veterans who are on the chopping block and players who have something to prove. These are some players to watch. Not the younger players, not the rookie players, but these are some players who might be on the bubble at this point. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Let's talk about the veterans who could be on the chopping block, players with something to prove. I personally wrote a piece about this about a week or so ago. Going into OTAs, there are some players that had definitely have something to prove, because they are on the roster bubble because they've underachieved or they have to kind of reestablish themselves. Number one on my list, and he hasn't proven anything yet, but it's going to end up very likely being another draft pick down the toilet, and that'd be Chad Williams, who, what is it, in two seasons has 20 receptions and not much else to show for it.
Yeah, and Williams is a great one because you look at what they did this offseason and they invested in three wide receivers in the draft. And I wrote about this for Wednesday, and so this will, you know, this podcast will be up already, or will be up after this article drops. But I really don't think they went into the end of day two, beginning of day three, going, you know, I really want to draft that Hakeem Butler guy. I think what happened was they got into day three and they started to go over their board and they're like, wait, are you sure Hakeem Butler wasn't drafted yet? Do we need to, like, let's go back through all the picks because that doesn't make sense. Why is this guy still on the board? And so then they said, okay. Because I think, like, even the Keyshawn Johnson kind of makes sense. Maybe not after they took Butler, but it, like in terms of where they drafted him and value and such, makes sense. And so you're looking at it, you go, all right, so you got Chris, you know, we know locks for this roster at wide receiver are Fitz, Kirk, Isabella, and Butler. And so if they're I think you and I both are assuming they're going to keep at least six wide receivers.
Right. Yeah, I'd say so.
So that means that Johnson and Williams and a guy like Kevin White, who would be one of the guys I'm kind of watching, are all fighting for those last, you know, two spots. Maybe they keep seven, but then Johnson and or Butler or even Chad Williams better be ready to play some special teams, right?
Most certainly. Absolutely. The Kevin White's the next guy that stands out the most because, you know, he's got the highest ceiling, you know, 14 games in three seasons. It's really disappointing for him as a player because he came out as a top 10 pick. He's got size. He's got elite speed. And he just has, you know, injury after injury after injury. But that receiver room is really full. And he's going to have to be really good, I think, to, like, significantly better than, say, an Andy Isabella or Hakeem Butler, because otherwise he's got to be able to play. You can't just stash him on the roster and have him be wide receiver five and not do anything.
Yep. And so that's the biggest thing. And so, you know, we talk about these wide receivers. What about the position that's basically a wide receiver in this offense? And that's the tight end. I mean, outside of Charles Clay, is there really a lock for this roster? You know, Max Williams is making more money than Ricky Seals-Jones. Obviously, they drafted Caleb Wilson. So these are, you know, these are guys that none of them outside of Williams stands out really as a two-way tight end, so to speak. So how many tight ends can they keep on this roster? I mean, Clay's more like an H-back at this point of his career. He's not a guy that you're going to ask to block a lot. We know Seals Jones, that's not really his forte or where he's best at. And so are they going to keep three tight ends? Are they going to keep four tight ends? It doesn't seem like with the way the roster will be constructed that they'll be able to afford to keep four tight ends. So how do they divide that up? Is it going to be, you know, Charles Clay and then a guy like Caleb Wilson, or is it going to be Charles Clay and a guy like Max Williams, who's more of the blocking tight end, and then Wilson's fighting with Ricky Seals-Jones for that last spot? I think the tight end battle is going to be just super intriguing to watch.
Yes. For me, the next guy that's kind of got something to prove, but he's not on the chopping block. That'd be Hassan Reddick. He's not on the chopping block. He's slated to start, but that young man needs to prove himself this year. He was in a terrible situation his rookie year. He struggled the game. In the end, I will say this. He was far more productive than we thought he was. When you look at the final numbers, he finished, according to team stats, he ended up with over 100 tackles. He filled the stat sheet. It wasn't necessarily, let's say, impactful or big play type things, but he was third on the time. These are the numbers. They were surprisingly productive. He had 102 tackles, 9 tackles for loss, 4 sacks, 6 passes broken up, a forced fumble, and another 5 QB hits and another 3 hurries. And then as well had a couple of special teams tackles. But he is dangerously close to being yet another Steve Keim bust, especially if he can't perform in this defense, where basically he's going to be asked to be instinctive. I don't think he has as many rules to his position as he did a year ago.
No, and that's kind of the hope, right? Is that he's finally able to take that step forward, because you assume Robert Kimdiche is not going to get that fifth-year extension, that he won't be back in 2020. And so then you're really hoping, and then obviously Josh Rosen's gone, so you're hoping that Humphreys, obviously, but then also Hassan Reddick can live up to the draft pick, that they can live up to the potential and the hype and kind of take over key roles. And you know, that's something we talked about even when they signed Jordan Hicks, is that the importance of Reddick moving forward because of what he should be able to do.
The comment that actually Vance Joseph spoke glowingly of Dennis Gardeck, undrafted guy from a year ago, but he has a prototypical beefy linebacker build. He's big, he's got strong hands, he's fast. If Reddick doesn't come around this year, I think Joseph already has his eyes on Gardeck, because he's already instinctively a linebacker. He's a linebacker in mentality. He's played linebacker for years, as opposed to Reddick, who by all accounts, Joseph said that his football IQ is increased, and you can see that he's becoming much smarter. Maybe he won't look football dumb this year, because that's what it looked like for the first half of last year. He did not look football smart. Like he was flying around a quarter second late.
Yep. And that's what you kind of want to just see him continue to grow with. The next guy for me is AQ Shipley. Obviously Mason Cole is there. They drafted Lamont Gaillard. So where does that leave Shipley? He is kind of a center only guy. Is he a guy that could start over Cole, and you move Cole as a flex type of player? Or is he a guy that, that's potentially, a $1 million.
Trade him to Arian.
But I mean, is that $1 million cap hit they're going to eat? So that's one that I'm kind of interested in. I'll follow along with what he can do for this team and where he fits in. A guy you brought up earlier too that I'll mention is David Amerson. With the Patrick Peterson suspension, unless somebody just completely balls out in all offseason training camp, Amerson seems like a lock for the 53 at this point, right?
It looks like it, yes. But he's a guy who needs to prove himself, because he was a pretty productive player, and he's got the length and he's got the physical traits, but he's got the stigma. He was a guy on the street who was picked up and was a starting cornerback on a terrible defensive team last year.
And then I think for me, the last one is actually one that we don't talk about enough, but it's the idea of Zane Gonzalez. He's the only
who has no competition in camp, by the
right.
way.
Right. He's, as I was going to say, he's the only kicker on this roster right now. Talent wise, it makes sense. He's a guy that was drafted because he's very solid, but he's really struggled in the NFL. He wasn't clean for the Cardinals even. So what do they do Do they bring somebody in? How does that work? Those are, you know, like you said, this isn't are they going to be cut type of question. It's just these are guys to watch, because with the new regime, with the new coaching staff, with the new styles, how do all of these guys fit into the 2019 Arizona Cardinals?
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, for our last segment, we're going to talk about the young players who could surprise. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast for the last segment of the show. Young players who could surprise this year. Obviously, if we're going to look at Kyler Murray's not going to surprise anyone. And the truth is that Cardinals fans have high expectations, probably excessively so, for Andy Isabella and Hakeem Butler. I personally am guarding judgment on Butler because I still don't think he will get significant playing time as a wide receiver four. I think he will be a high variance guy that'll have two or three big games and make some big plays, but ultimately won't be the consistently impactful player because he's wide receiver four. But if we're looking at young players who could surprise, I'm gonna nail down, and I mentioned him earlier, Michael Dogby, as a guy that, as a young player who could surprise. I don't think he's going to be a significant snap guy, but he is one of my favorite picks in the draft because in terms of defensive line depth, he brings strength, he brings athleticism, and he brings toughness. I really think he will be a strong rotational player who far is he's one of those late round gems that you find. He's not going to be the star, not early on, but he will be solid and will be, might be, you know, Hakeem Butler has the high variance possibility, but I think he probably will be the most consistent day three player that they have.
Yeah, and you know, one of the guys that you hit on earlier, and I'm going to just tag on another guy, is Zeke Turner and Dennis Gardeck. Turner weighs, what, 226 now? Isn't that what they're reporting?
I think so, but yeah, he's up about... He's up about 10 pounds. And I talked about the offseason. Vance Joseph does not play linebackers under 230. Right. So Zeke Turner was not a schematic fit to start.
Yep. And so now as he continues to put on weight, the glowing reviews of Gardeck, who is kind of that prototype, you know, mauler inside linebacker, how do these guys... You know, obviously, I see both of them on this roster because of their special teams prowess, Turner especially. But doesn't it seem like both of those guys, especially with Hicks' injury history and then Reddick's kind of ineffectiveness, that they could be pushing for playing time during the season? And you know, those are two young guys. They're not rookies, but they're guys that are in the second year after being undrafted and thrown into a wildfire last year.
Yeah, Gardeck is a guy to watch. I think both the guys are locks for the roster because they have the same special teams coach, and they were fantastic. Zeke Turner was tackling everybody. I think he had finished with 15 special teams tackles. He had, according to Team Stat, 22 special teams tackles.
Which is absurd.
That is absurd. Double digits is absurd, and he doubled double digits, essentially.
Yeah, so, I mean, so that's, those are guys I'm interested, you know, like I said, they're not rookies. It's kind of cheating a little bit, but it, you know, like you said, Isabella, there's a lot expected of him. He's probably going to be wide receiver three in this offense. Butler's going to be kind of a bit piece, kind of a matchup red zone type of guy. Maybe the occasional big play this year, but and then those the rest of the day three guys. You took the good one in Dogby. Guyard is interesting, but I really don't think they expect him to play this year. So you know, I kind of went back a year and just looked at Gardeck and Turner and kind of where they fit in this whole scheme of things, because that's going to be what's so interesting is that, you know, Hicks is really the only guy that you look at and go, all right, when he's healthy, he'll be on the field. Who else will be there with him? And I hope it's Reddick. I think both of us do. But I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the season, you know, it's Gardeck who's, like you said, kind of turning heads and is the guy that is getting the praise.
I also look at, you know, I don't know what to – he could be a sneaky steal, and that's Keyshawn Johnson. But again, he's not a lock for the roster. Where does he fit? But I know with in terms of overall receiver skills, he's – the most refined of the guys that they picked. He doesn't have, and he plays faster than, like, it's one of those, he plays faster than he is. But I think special teams, I don't think will be a problem for him, but he's probably a guy more to watch year two, but his skill set is one that I'm sure he will be super productive on the second team preseason, and he will put up mad numbers, but he's a guy that intrigues me because of his complete skill set.
Well, and the interesting thing about him is that when you look at everybody they drafted, the guy that everybody looks at as the slot wide receiver is Andy Isabella, but when it comes down to it, both Johnson and Butler really are more prototype in terms of play slot guys in the NFL than Isabella is. Isabella from a size standpoint is, but from a play standpoint, Butler and Johnson make more sense there. And Butler was extremely successful in the slot.
Well, and Isabella barely played the slot.
Right.
Barely. He was one of the highest rated outside receivers. Right.
I think he was over 80% outside snaps. But Butler was like over 50% as a slot guy, I'm pretty sure. I'll have to go back and look what that exact number. But yeah, it was a pretty high number where you're like, okay, so obviously one of the things with Johnson and Butler and Isabella that we've talked about, and then obviously we already know with Kirk and Fitz, is that they're all kind of interchangeable guys that they can line up inside, they can line up outside. But as you said, where do they fit? Like, how do you get Keyshawn Johnson reps outside of garbage time or obviously in the preseason? Who do you sit and who does he play over? Because even if he's playing over Hakeem Butler, that's still going to be slightly disappointing, is it not? Like,
right. The wide receiver four, traditionally, that's a guy that gets 10 to 15 plays, maybe.
Right. And so even if you double that and you say it's 20, let's just say it's 20. I mean, is Johnson really going to take 15 of those, and Butler's only going to get 5. Is he going to be able to hold off a guy that was so dynamic in the air raid at West Virginia and Kevin White, you know, that we talked about earlier under Dana Holgorsen, who, I mean, he and Cliff are both disciples of that offense. And so if White's ever going to make it from a health standpoint and then a play standpoint, it's going to be in this offense. I mean, there's just no better chance for him. Now, health is the biggest thing, but so yeah, the Johnson's going to be really intriguing to watch. Is he wide receiver 6 and just hang on the roster because he drafted him, or is he a guy that, you know, like you said, overcomes the time, and it's because he's just such a good route runner and so good with the ball in his hands.
And with that, are there any other players, young players, that you're going to keep an eye out for as the spring work continues, or Bruce Ayers like to call soccer? This is the soccer season right now.
I mean, Kyler Murray, but that's really it.
All right. Well, we will end this edition of the Rise of C-Red podcast, and we will be back. We'll probably have, we'll wait till after mini camp. We might have something. We'll probably do a show after OTAs and mini camp wrap up to kind of talk about all the storylines going into the summer break, and then maybe have another show talking about division rankings, which we've done the past couple of years before we hit our training camp preview. So that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening to the Rise Up C-Red podcast, and we'll be back in about 3 weeks.
Have a good night.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.